So just a little bit of background. We began discussing the topic of nogea be'edos, namely the disqualification for biased witnesses. If you have some kind of material gain from your testimony in a case, we throw out your testimony. And last time we saw the Gemara Sanhedrin and the Gimel, the continuation of our Gemara, and we saw a couple of interesting things there. Number one, we noted that there's no source for this disqualification of nogea be'edos, of biased witnesses, which left us to wonder what the source was. Either it's just a svara, it's just logic. If somebody's biased and they stand to gain from a case, we throw them out. Or it has to fit into some other category of formal disqualification. And we also noted this very strange line in the Gemara about the following case. It said that, let's say, Reuven and Shimon have a case against one another. They are litigants. And Reuven wants to disqualify one of Shimon's witnesses. So the witness is testifying against him. Gemara says, can he disqualify Shimon's witness? Obviously not. If you have material, I mean, obviously he stands to gain by disqualifying the witnesses who are testifying against him. But the Gemara had the strange assertion that if he comes together with another witness, it depends on why they disqualify him. If they say that this witness is a Gazlan or a Russia, he's disqualified based on his prior activities that render him unfit for testimony, then he is... he's not believed because, again, he stands to gain by getting rid of the witness that's coming to testify against him. However, if he makes the assertion that this witness comes from an entire family that possess some kind of formal disqualification, they are Avadim, for example, and the entire family is not fitting to give testimony, then we're willing to accept his testimony, at least according to Rebbe Meir. Even though he's still getting rid of a witness who's about to testify against him, we're willing to accept his testimony as long as he says... that the entire family is disqualified, and we're beginning to wonder why that should ever be the case, if indeed he has the same exact bias and the same exact impetus to get rid of the witness who is coming to testify against him. So we said, we're going to take a look at the central sugya, which is this Gemara and Bava Basra Daf Mem Gimel. And we began reading the Gemara, but I think it's actually instructive here to begin with the Hatanya. It's about, I would say, about 15 lines down. Last word on the line is B'nei, with a Dalet there. You have the exact line? Last word on the line is B'nei. It's right across from Tosfos Dibur Maskil Mit B'nei. You have Bava Basra Gimel?
Yes.
Yeah. So, B'nei, how are you?
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. V'hatanya, did we not learn in a Braisa? If you have people who live in a city and their Sefer Torah is stolen, you can't have the case judged by the people who are in the city, because again, they have skin in the game, and you can't use their judges, and you can't use the people of the city as witnesses. They all have a stake in the case. The Gemara asks, "Vim isa lisalgu betrei minayhu v'lidainu." The Gemara asks, "Why don't we do the following thing? Have two of them say, look, we're giving up our portion in this Sefer Torah. The assumption here is that the Sefer Torah is owned communally by everybody in the community." The Gemara says, "Why don't they do the following? Why don't two of them just get up and say, I'm not going to maintain I forfeit my stake in the Sefer Torah. I no longer have direct skin in the game. Let me testify." On the basis of saying that I'm no longer going to be considered one of the partners in the ownership of this Sefer Torah. So the Gemara answers, why can't they do that? Shiny Sefer Torah de l'shmia ka'i. The reason why they can't do that is because even if they give up their ownership of the Sefer Torah, they still stand to gain from having the Sefer Torah because it is for shmia, it is for hearing it publicly. So if you manage to resolve the case and somebody has to pay for a new Sefer Torah, they still gain by being able to hear the Sefer Torah in shul. Tashma, the Gemara brings a proof. Ha'omer tenu mana levnei iri. If somebody says, give a mana, give a certain monetary amount to the people of my city, again, ein danin b'dayonei osa'ir ve'ein mevi'in raya me'anche osa'ir. Like once again, Gemara says, you can't bring a proof, you can't judge the case. Let's say he pledges to give money to the people of the town, and then he reneges. So the Gemara says, you can't use the judges of that town to judge the case. And you can't bring a proof from the people of that town. Again, obviously they're going to testify against him because they are going to want to receive the money. The Gemara again asks, Amai, Lisalku betrei nafshayhu v'lidainu. Why can't two of them just say, we're forfeiting our stake, and judge the case? So the Gemara says, hachanami b'sefer Torah. It must again be a Sefer Torah case, and as we just saw, Sefer Torah is an exception, because they still want to have the Sefer Torah, even if they don't own it in a strict material sense, because they want to be able to have a Sefer Torah to just serve the community in terms of the regular functions of a Sefer Torah, to have public Torah reading. Third case, Tashma. Ha'omer tenu mana le'aniye iri. Somebody pledges that he's going to give a mana to the poor people of his city. Again, ein danin b'dayanei osa'ir ve'ein mevi'in raya me'anshe osa'ir. You can't use the city's judges, and you can't bring proof from the people of the city. The Gemara says, v'tizbara, aniyim shakle dayanei mifsali. Why should the judges be disqualified? After all, who's receiving the money here? Are the judges receiving the money? In the previous case, he pledged to give money to all the citizens of the town, of the municipality. So in that case, they're going to receive money, so they're biased. Here, in this case, he's pledging to the poor. So why should the judges be disqualified? No, what it should say is, if the judges are poor, then you can't use them. Because then they obviously have what to gain, because, again, he pledged money to the poor. And similarly, you can't bring proof from the poor, from the destitute of that city. Again, why can't two people just say, we are going to give up our portion in this donation and judge the case? The Gemara answers, Hachanami b'sefer Torah. Here again, we're dealing with Sefer Torah. Again, the Gemara keeps coming back to this technicality of Sefer Torah. And why are they called poor people if he's donating to give a Sefer Torah? Because everybody against the Sefer, when it comes to a Sefer Torah, is considered an ani. Anybody who lacks, it's a very inspiring line in the Gemara, anyone who lacks a Sefer Torah is destitute, is thirsting for the words of Torah. So everybody is considered an ani when it comes to a Sefer Torah. And the Gemara goes through a couple of other possibilities. An alternative is he's pledging money to the actual poor people of the town. And it's a case where the judges are really the ones who are responsible for supporting these poor people. The Gemara gives a number of possibilities for where the judges stand to gain from his donation. Either, if there's a set amount, the Gemara says, and they could just give their set amount that they're obligated to give. Let's say each judge has to give $50. So let some of them give their $50 and judge the case. The Gemara says, no, there are different ways in which they gain from the donation. Point is as follows. What the Gemara makes very clear is that, except in this exceptional case of Sefer Torah, if I have some kind of bias in a case, it's perfectly okay for me to shed that bias in one way or another, and revive my eligibility for testimony. So if somebody's bringing testimony against...
Testimony or being a judge?
Both. Great question. The simple implication of the Gemara is that it should be both. As we will see, Tosfos are going to limit it to one. But again, the Gemara is talking about Lidainu, right? Ve'ein mevi in raya me'anche osa ha'ir. So the Gemara is talking about judging, and it seems to be talking about testimony as well. The language when it comes to shedding your bias is vilisalku betrei minayhu, vilidainu, and they should be able to judge the case. So we'll see that most Rishonim don't take that as significant, but as we'll see in a moment, Tosas do. Any case where I have a bias, let's say the case that the Gemara Bava Basra starts with, we're partners in a field. I have a partnership with Reuven in a field, and somebody else comes and says, the field never belongs to either of you. So he says, it's my field. Right? So obviously I can't testify. I'm a litigant. He's claiming the field from me. But if I would say, you know what? I'm going to relinquish my stakes in the field. I'm going to hand it all over to my partner. So whoever wins the case right now, I'm not going to own any portion of the field, then I should be able to testify. And it seems to make sense, right? If I shed my bias, I'm no longer a biased witness. Intuitively, it seems to make great sense that once I shed or get rid of whatever skin I have in the game, I should be able to testify. But as we noted at the very end of last time, there's one major problem. And that is based on a Gemara that appears later in Bava Basra, You can see this in source. It's quoted by Tosis in source 3. It's really Tosis on our Taf. V'lisalku beitrei minayu v'lidainu. Tosis comments on our Gemara. The Gemara says that as long as they shed their bias, they are allowed to testify. V'im Tomar asks Tosfos. V'hab'inon t'chiloso v'sofo b'kashrus. V'hacha have a t'chilo b'psul. V'have a k'mal karo v'nisrachi. Tosis here referencing a Gemara on Bava Basra Dafkov Chavchas, which says the following thing. The Gemara says, as we noted at the very end last time, that for a witness to be kosher, you need tchiloso, besofo, bekashrus. There are two critical points in the life of a witness. One is the sha'as re'iyah, when the witness sees what happened. The other is the sha'as hagada, the moment when the witness comes into court and reports to the court what exactly he saw. Right? Those are the two critical points. Gemara Bava Basra Dafkov Chavchas says that in order for a witness's testimony to be considered in court, he must have been a kosher witness through that entire stage, or at least at both of those critical points. The example the Gemara gives is a karov shenis rachik. Again, tragic circumstance. You have two brothers-in-law, right? If somebody, Reuven is married to Shimon's sister, so they're brothers-in-law. And something happens, and then the woman unfortunately dies. Shimon's sister dies. So now they're not related anymore. The Gemara says that if something happened while they were brothers-in-law, even though now they are no longer brothers-in-law due to the tragic circumstance, they can still not testify for one another. Because if the initial occurrence happened while they were still related, then they're disqualified. That's not tchilaso v'sofo b'kashrus. You need the beginning and the end to both be done in a state of qualification for testimony. Now the Rishonim discuss what happens if when he saw he was kosher, let's say they weren't related, right? Reuven serves as a witness on Shimon, a loan that Shimon gives to somebody else. They weren't related. Then Shimon marries Reuven's sister. They become brothers-in-law. Then, unfortunately, Rachman al-Atzlan, she passes away, so they're no longer witnesses, and now Reuven wants to testify. So at the moment of the Re'iyah, they weren't related. At the moment of the Haggadah Be'Bastin, when he's telling it, they weren't related, but there was some point in the middle where they were related. So the Rishonim discuss that. That's what Chalos Rishonim as to whether or not that's not okay. But at the very least, at those two points, you need to be kosher. And here, at the initial point, you were totally disqualified. You were totally biased. So why all of a sudden do we have this exception to the rule that applies all across the board, that you need the entire life of the testimony to be done in a state of witness eligibility, and all of a sudden here we're saying even though he was ineligible at the initial point, as long as he sheds that ineligibility, he can offer testimony. So Tosfos offer what's rather, in my mind, a rather cryptic answer. Omeri, to lo shayach tchilaso bepaslos hacha, kivon she'ein paslos toloi buguf ela b'mamon. Here, because the disqualification does not relate to beguf, I guess we would translate to your person, but rather to your monetary involvement, there's no problem. What in the world does that mean? Any thoughts?
I mean, I can tell you what I think it means here.
Please do.
If something is an inherent soul, then you need tchilato b'sofo b'kasher. If it just has to do with your involvement in the case financially, then you don't need tchilato.
But what's the basis for that kind of distinction?
That I don't know.
Right, no, that, right, okay, fine. So that seems to be clear. You see, when he says beguf, that seems to be like a personal involvement, or what you're calling an intrinsic involvement, let's say something like a karov, like a relative, right?
I think we discussed this last week, and I thought it would make sense exactly the opposite way. Meaning, if you have financial involvement, you're more likely to be biased if you...
Because it will color the way you saw the case.
It will color the way you saw it. So even if you're no longer involved at the time of your testimony, you can't change the way that you perceive what happened when it happened.
Right.
If it has to do with, you know, the fact that you, you know, race pigeons, then...
Right, exactly. Doesn't impact the way you see the case necessarily. And I told you that the swara that you're offering is substantiated in the Rimigash, as we'll see, probably not tonight, but hopefully next week. Probably spend one or two more weeks on this topic. So, So we'll hopefully see that in the Migash. But certainly in the context of this particular application, it's definitely the other way around. I mean, we know that, if, again, certainly in this Tosfos, and as we'll see in other Rishonim, we're saying that this problem only applies by a psol beguf, one of those personal disqualifications, but not to a disqualification that's based on monetary involvement or some potential monetary gain. That's
good, Jen? Just, if it was goof, I just imagine that that's something that you could easily shed and say, okay, now I'm no longer involved, which makes it
okay.
A weird...
So I think that's... I think that's spot on. I mean, or at least one interpretation of Tosfos. And I think that's something that we're potentially going to see within the Ramban. In other words, I think sometimes you have to ask, when is there a lingering after effect of your involvement? If you were related to somebody and now you're not, right? Is that really as if it never happened? Or now, he was your brother-in-law, now he's, I guess, your ex-brother-in-law or something like that. Can you really just fully shed that relationship as if it never happened? When it comes to a monetary involvement, we might be more inclined to say that once you've shed your personal interest in the case, it doesn't really impact your personality or your personal identity in a way that it would have a continued impact after you've shed your involvement. Yeah.
This might depend on what we mean by goof. Meaning, if with regard to relationships, yes. But you know, in regard to being a mumar or being, I don't know, your other chayresh, I don't know.
Kostner, whatever, yeah.
I
wonder if, I have not looked into whether Tchilas B'Psof Sof B'Kashvus would apply to chayresh shenis pakeach. Is that in the Gemara? I have to look back at the Gemara, Daf Kof
Ches. That seems unreasonable. I'm saying like
maybe not. Cheresh and Espakeah could. Let me hold off on that. We'll come back to that example. But okay, yeah.
Right, but I'm saying those are all.
Gazal and Shechazar B'tshuva. What?
Yeah. So those are all psulei guf.
Right.
Probably, if you had to choose guf versus mammon.
Right.
But those are, you know, not sort of intrinsic to you and things.
Certainly, like you'll say, Gazal and Shechazar B'tshuva. Right? Right. The whole point of tshuva is that
right.
You can, return. Okay. So it's an interesting point, but at least in the context of Karov Shenesrachik, that's something that we can consider. Again, we'll have to look at, if you look at 3 in the Rashba, that's the Ramban, and I think he has a formulation that's somewhat similar to what you're saying. So I'll have to take a look at it. Nakir, anything? You good?
Or it's, I mean, that's, if the substance of Akashius is more of just some sort of formal qualification that you need to, then as opposed to as far as we've been dealing with it more, so maybe we could suggest that Nogebe just is just not a formal soul.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay, good. So I think these are all like viable options. Let's take a look at what the Rishonim have to say. Now, just before we do, I will note that before we get into, let's just a little background. We're going to see 3 different interpretations. They're all quoted in the Rashba, which is why I think it's just easiest to view them in the Rashba itself. Really, the Rashba is not the earliest source for all of these, but they're all quoted in the Rashba. 3 reasons why there's no Tchilas B'Psol V'Sof B'Kashrus here. And these 3 potentially set up the 3 major approaches in the sugya that will carry us through the rest of the sugya, because there are 3 major conceptual approaches to this disqualification of Nogeya B'Eidos. To a large degree, they emerge from the analysis of the Rishonim on Daf Mem Gimel right here, but they're going to have widespread ramifications. So let's skip to source 5. We'll come back to source 4 in a moment. But let's take a look at what the Rashba has to say. Source 5. Ve'amai, istalku betremi nayu vili dainuhu be'edusan. Says the Rashba, why are they disqualified? Let 2 of them disengage, right, or forfeit their monetary stake in this particular case and let them serve as witnesses, or let 3 of them forfeit their stake in this case and serve as judges. And he qualifies because she'in lahen nami kroven ba'ir to imken akati nodigin beidusam him the kroveyan. He said, obviously it must be a case where they don't have any relatives in the city, because if they did, they would still have a problem of kurva. Now, it's very interesting that he says, nogin be'edusam likrovehim. He doesn't say that they would be psulim as krovim, right? There's a separate psul called psul karov, that if you were a relative of somebody in the case, then you're a karov. He uses the language of nogin be'edusam him likrovehim, which is an interesting language, which is definitely noteworthy. But at the very least, he's making it clear that if they have other relatives in the city, they would still be disqualified. And now he poses the big question that all the Rishonim asked that we already saw in Tosos. The Eagle of Medak, and one can pose the following question. Chimastalkin Meheve, when they remove themselves, when they forfeit their stake in the case, how does that actually help? V'habi'inan t'chilaso v'sofa b'kashras. Don't you need the entire duration, the entire life of the testimony to be done in a state of proper qualification? Va'afilu b'dine momenos. And even that's true even in dine momenos. Chutar minam perek yesh noklin, v'hayodeya lo be'edos, hachalo na'as alo chosno, o shahaya karo v'nisrachek. The exact cases that we were discussing. Either somebody who initially wasn't a karov, but ended up becoming a karov through marriage, or somebody who was a karov through marriage and ended up not being related through marriage or through death or divorce, as the case may be. We have this problem of t'chilas of p'sof v'sof v'kashos. So the Rashba quotes three answers. Number one, the kasav ha-ravid zal zelashonu. First he quotes the ravid, saying the following. Ki b'inan hachi, when do we need t'chilas of p'sof v'kashos? Hani mili bepaslos de gufa o bepaslos de kurva. When it is a personal disqualification or a disqualification through family relations. Note the language of paslos de gufa, which is parallel to Tosfos. Aval hacha mishum cheshada de nogin be'edusan. Here, what is the reason why they are disqualified? Simply because we cannot trust their testimony. We must suspect that they are going to be dishonest because of the fact that they have some material gain in the case. It's just a basic chashad. And once we no longer have reason to suspect them, they're obviously going to be ksherim. What the Ravid is saying is exactly what Yakir was saying a moment ago. In other words, when it comes to Nogea Be'edus, we noted that there's no source for this psul. What's the reason why they're disqualified? It's just basic chacham ein perosho. If you see that somebody has much to gain in the case, you have to just call their reliability into question. You can't necessarily trust them. Now, once they no longer have anything to gain, your considerations aside, Jerry, which obviously the Rav is not concerned about, right? Of implicit or subconscious bias in the case. Is that, well, you don't like subconscious?
No, never mind.
The Ravid's obviously not concerned about that, but certainly in terms of a question whether or not they're going to engage in some outright dishonesty, once they have nothing to gain anymore, we have no reason to suspect them. So what the Ravid is saying, that this whole psul of Nogea Be'edos is not a formal disqualification, the way Russia or Mummer or any of the things that we were talking about before is. It's a technical disqualification, we just can't trust them. Are they really psulim le'edos? Are they really disqualified? They're not disqualified. We just have a question as to whether... We have a question about their reliability. Once their reliability is proven, because they no longer have anything to gain, of course they're going to be ksherim. They were never really fundamentally psulim in the first place. And that's why there's no problem of t'chilaso b'psul v'sofo b'kashrus. Now, it's quite conceivable that that's what Tosos mean as well. Tosos don't put it in those terms. They say, ein pasos tole b'guf ela b'mamon. But it's conceivable what they mean, that their apostles is tali b'mamon, is just that you stand to gain. And as long as you no longer stand to gain, we cannot trust you. And once we can trust you, there's no problem with your testimony. That's why, Jack, I said before, your example of cheresh and spakeach is fascinating as well. The psul of a cheresh for testimony. Right? Cheresh in almost all areas of halacha, with the exception of chagiga, dealing with a deaf mute, right? And the application to bismei chazal, we have all sorts of technology, right? Interesting question. But certainly bismei chazal, deaf mute is a cheresh, right? So what's the reason such a person is disqualified from testimony? Is that a formal psul? Or is it just a lack of da'as? Is it an inability to testify or something like that? If it's a formal psul, then presumably, according to the Ravid, t'chilaso b'psul v'sofo b'kashrus would apply. If it's just that we assume a lack of da'as, and Nispakeach, now he has the da'as to give proper Haggadah bebeistin, then you could certainly claim that by the same token, that concern would not apply. And Chayosh Nispakeach would be able to offer testimony. It's a very common question that you have by many types of psulim. Katan comes up all the time. Why can't a katan be mekadesh, right? A young boy who's less than 13 goes over to a woman, says, "Hareat mekudesh asli b'tava azo." We know that it's not a kiddushin, right? The kiddushin does not work. Why? Is it a lack of das, or is it because the pasuk says ki yigach ish isha? Depends. You've got Rashi says one thing, you've got other Rishonim they say other things, right? So a lot of cases you have this question as to whether it's a formal psul or just a technical disqualification. The Ravid's assertion is that it, A, nogeya be'edos is just a technical disqualification, and because it's a technical disqualification, tefillah of psul v'sof b'kasha doesn't apply.
This also assumes that all the other psulim are not technical and that they have some sort of fundamental meaning. You could have said that katan or cheresh or all of those to separate them from
the Ravid must assume that anything tefillah of psul does apply to is a fundamental psul. The Ravid must assume that. Is the assumption that So the Ravid is making a big assertion about the nature of Nogeya Be'edos, and that's the most important thing for us. He's asserting that Nogeya Be'edos is about just a technical lack of reliability. But there's another critical assumption that the Ravid is making as well. What else is he assuming about? And this is a classic example of like Halacha X situation Y. He's making a certain assumption about Chilas of Psul V'Sof B'Kashos. The Ravid is making two assertions. Number one, Nogeya Be'edos is not a formal psul. Number two, if it's not a formal psul, tchilas of psul doesn't apply. That's kind of like the inverse, or the converse. I don't know. It's the flip side of what you were saying a moment ago, Jerry. The Ravid is assuming that tchilas of psul v'sof b'kashrus doesn't apply if the psul is not a formal psul. Correct? Right? It doesn't apply to nogeya be'edus. Why? Because number one, nogeya be'edus is not a formal psul, and B, tchilas of psul v'sof b'kashrus only applies to formal psulim.
Trying to evaluate how that statement related to my statements and whether it was a contra
positive. I'm not sure.
Well, if it was a contra positive,
then it would be the same. Exactly. Correct. Same, yeah, exactly. yeah, it is the contra positive. You were saying tchilas of psul v'sof b'kashrus only applies to formal psulim.
Yeah.
Psulim.
And
this
you
is.
You said that if it's not a formal psul, then it's not tchilas true. Yes, yeah. That would be the.
Yeah. So it is indeed the flip side of what you were saying. But is that really the case? Now, to a certain degree, the Ravid's logic makes a certain degree of sense. What he's saying is, if it's just a technical disqualification, you're not really psul, you're not really puzzle in the first place. We just have our doubts, and our doubts have been reassured. But it does partially depend on how you understand tchilas of psul v'sof b'kashrus. So if you look at source number 6, is the Rashbam Bas Daf Kuf Hav Ches, where the Gemara discusses this whole notion of tchilas of psul v'sof b'kashrus. And Rosenzweig asserted that the Rashbam would actually disagree with the Ravid. The Rashbam says as follows, kol she tchilaso re'iyas ha'maisa, right, the beginning, as we said, is when you see the testimony, o sofo she'as ha'godas edus, the point when you relate what you saw to the court, b'paslas, third dibur ha'maskel. Kelomar, kol she tchilaso b'paslas she'as re'iyas ha'edus, anybody who was disqualified at the point that he saw whatever happened, the hashta sofo b'kashrus, but now at the point that he's ready to relate that testimony to the court, he is qualified, puzzle. Nonetheless, even though he's technically qualified now, we cannot accept his testimony. Because at the beginning he was not fitting for this particular piece of testimony, Ukraksiv hu aid o ra'a. Divish as or iasa maisa yehe ra'u le edus zu. And the pasuk says, and he is a witness o ra'a, or he saw, and the drusha from this is that at the point of iasa maisa, at the point when he saw, he should be fitting to deliver this testimony. Now, the Rashbam can admittedly be interpreted in multiple ways, but the way the Rav Rosenzweig understood this Rashbam is that the Rashbam is offering a different understanding of tchilas of psul v'sof b'kashrus. It's not that if you had a formal disqualification, then that formal disqualification lingers in some sense, even after it should no longer apply. The idea of the Rashbam is that you must be ready at all points, from the very moment that you saw what happened, you must be ready and able to give the testimony in court. And if you are not able to do that, even if it's for a technical reason, you are going to be disqualified. Mashal l'mahadavar doma. There's a concept called Eidos l'kiyum hadavar. In certain cases, testimony is not just to provide proof. Testimony is necessary in order for a certain halachic status to take effect. The most common example that we all deal with is kiddushin, right? Is marriage. They call up two witnesses. You need two witnesses to be there, not just so that they can testify later on that these two people are married. If the two witnesses aren't present, the marriage doesn't work. That's called Eidos l'kiyum hadavar. There's a shita that's quoted, I think it's the Rebbe of Barzaloni, who says that if witnesses are pasul midrabbanan, we know that there are lots of rabbinic disqualifications of witnesses. Let's say the one that you were referencing before, Jerry, Africha Yonim or Misache Pekuvia, people who are disqualified on a rabbinic level. When it comes to Kiddushin, they are disqualified on a De'oraisa level. Anyone who is disqualified from most testimony on a rabbinic level is disqualified from Eidos L'kiyum HaDavar on a De'oraisa level. How in the world does that make sense? The Rabbanan come along and create a disqualification, then all of a sudden it registers on a Torah level? How does that work? So I think the most compelling way to explain it is that it depends on the nature of Eidos L'kiyum HaDavar. This is a big machlokes. There are, broadly speaking, two approaches to Eidos L'kiyum HaDavar. But one approach that's offered, I think, initially in the Rishonim, it kind of emerges from the Rashba, and it's known as the opinion of the Ketzos, because the Ketzos widely adopted this view, is that certain halachic acts are so important that the Torah dictates that in order for them to work, you must have people who are able to affirm its existence. When it comes to a marriage, because that's such a sensitive area of halacha, and if people mess up, there could be mamzerim, and it's such a sanctified area of halacha as well, the Torah says that in order for that chalos, in order for that halachic status to get off the ground and to take effect, you must have people who are ready to verify and can prove in a court of law that it has taken place. Now, in the case of people who are psulim derabbanan, are they able to verify in a court of law that this took place? They're not. Just on a pragmatic level, they are not able to do that. It is true, the reason why they aren't able to do that is because of a rabbinic enactment. But if we're just analyzing this in a purely pragmatic sense, would they be able to walk into a court and offer testimony? They would not. And because they cannot prove, because Beis Din would never accept them to prove the existence of this marriage, you lack that critical qualification of a marriage getting off the ground, that you need people present who can then verify and certify that the marriage indeed was valid. So it's true that it was only due to a derabbanan issue that they were disqualified, not a fundamental de'oraisa psul. But because in a pragmatic sense they were not able to offer the testimony, they don't meet that requirement of Eidos L'kiyum HaDavar. And I think what the Rashbam is saying here is something similar. In order for you to qualify as a witness, at the moment that you see the event taking place, you must be able to go all the way. At that moment, you must be capable of offering full testimony. And if you cannot, even if it's due to a technicality like Nogea Be'edos, even if it's just due to a technicality that we have to call your reliability into question, it's not a formal halachic disqualification, but in the end of the day, in a pragmatic sense, you are not ready to go. You don't have everything in one shot. Everything has to be there. The moment that you see, you have to be ready and capable to deliver the testimony in court. And if you don't, that's tchilas b'psul. Now, if you adopt that approach to tchilas b'psul v'sof b'kashras, then even if you adopt the Ravid's interpretation of Nogea Be'edos that is only a technical disqualification, you would still have a problem. So the Ravid rests on two assumptions. Number one, he asserts that Nogea Be'edos is a technical disqualification rather than a fundamental one. Number two, he must assume that tchilas b'psul v'sof b'kashras only applies to formal psulim. Again, as I tell my students all the time, this is like a classic construct in Lamdus and a classic construct in logic in general. I think our Rav Nussbaum Shalom calls it halacha ex situation. Why? I give my students a lot of time, the most basic, what's considered the most basic analytic philosophical argument, right? Socrates is a man, proposition number one, all men are mortal, right? Conclusion, Socrates is mortal, right? So I always point out to them, you can dispute the conclusion by arguing with either of the premises. You can either, no, Socrates is not a man, Socrates is a dog, I don't know, if you name your dog Socrates, or B, you can argue, or you can argue with the proposition that all men are mortal. You could say, no, not all men are mortal. And if you argue with either one of those, you could dispute the conclusion. And that's like a classic thing if a lamdan has to be aware of. If you're trying to analyze a conceptual legal system in any form of rigorous way, you have to be identify the different strata of assumptions and recognize where you can disagree. So the Ravid's conclusion rests on those two assumptions. We could disagree with either one.
Yeah, just to go back to this. Is that saying that if someone is pustable any time, like even like they witness it, let's say they were kosher then and then they're pustable now and now they're going for testimony, but they weren't ready, quote, to like testify in between that middle part?
So I told you, the middle part is a machlokas rishon, right? Let's
so,
say.
So he's
not taking a stance on that, right? Is it only, that seems to be a question in the rishonim. In other words, is it like a continuum that entire period he needs to be ready? Or are there two critical moments? The moment where he sees and the moment where he testifies in court, and whatever happens in the middle is irrelevant to us. I don't know if the Rashbam is taking a stance on that, but that is discussed. It's an important question. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm just trying to understand it then. What the problem is with him being...
I think with the way the Rashbam would put it, and this again gets to a larger sugya that I actually referenced last week in Makos Tavav, where a lot of this comes up, and we'll see. We'll see some of the Rishonim in Makos Tavav, probably not this week, but hopefully next week. The idea of the Rashbam would be that moment of seeing is when your status as a witness is determined.
Okay.
If you can bring it home at that moment, then you're good as a witness. Obviously, barring, you know, if you're disqualified at the moment you come into court, that's not going to work, but fundamentally, the critical moment is that moment. If you can bring it home at that moment, you're good. If not, you can't. That would be the idea. Or, if you adopt the alternative approach, you'd say that the entire period between seeing and testifying in Beis Din, that entire period is the critical period. You must be pristine and kosher the entire time. And if you violate that, then you have a problem. Okay? Fine. Approach number two. V'lashon acher pirish. And this is a critical approach as well. This is the approach of the Rimigash that I was referencing before. Again, you could see it inside the Rimigash, but again, just for the sake of brevity, we're just looking at all of these inside the Rashba. Lashon Acher Pirish, Gabe Mamon Lo Mikri Tchilaso Bepaslas. The reason why in this Psalm Mamon, again, the Rishonim are all dealing with the same words here, we saw that in Tosis as well, it's not Tchilaso Bepsol, Dekiva Dematile Hana'a Mine, since he receives some kind of benefit from the case, Lav Bar Eidos Hu Klal, he is not a witness at all. If you look at the language of the Rimigash distinguishes between two categories. And this is where I said the Rimigash gets quite brisker. There's one category called an aid puzzle. Somebody who is a witness who is disqualified. There's another category called someone who is not a witness at all. Lav bar edos hu klal. He is not within the category of witnesses. What I think the Rimigash means by that is as follows. When we talk about a court, we have different roles in the court, right? Primarily three different roles. We have a judge, we have a witness, and we have a litigant. We have three different roles in the court. If you have one of those roles, then you are fundamentally outside of the sphere of the other roles. If you are a ba'al davar, that's a critical term we're going to introduce, ba'al davar, then it's not that you're an aid puzzle. It's not like you're similar to a Goslin, or to a Russia, or to a Karov. Those are all people who are witnesses, who are potentially within that third category of witness, but are disqualified from giving testimony. If you are a Baal Dover, if you're one of the litigants, it's not that you are a disqualified witness. You're not a witness at all. You're fulfilling a different role in the court. And that is not considered an aid puzzle. It's considered somebody who is out entirely outside of the category of aidus. Again, we have a principle of ein aid na'asedayon. A witness is not allowed to be a judge. It's a principle that appears in the Gemara, particularly in, comes up here in Bava Basra, comes up in Rosh Hashanah, in Eid Nasa Dalia. Now, why can't a witness also be a judge on the case? So the Rishonim give different reasons, right? Some of them are quite intuitive. If you're a witness, how can you judge, etc., etc., etc. One reason given in the Yerushalmi is that a witness needs to stand and the judge needs to sit. Very strange reason given in the Yerushalmi. And Rosenzweig, based on that Yerushalmi and also based on languages and other Rishonim, suggested that perhaps the problem is that there are different roles in court and you can't be wearing multiple hats at the same time. Comes up in Gittin, I think that's where we did this again. You can't be wearing multiple hats. Either you're a witness, or a judge, or a litigant. But you can't fulfill multiple roles at the same time. The Rimigash is asserting that any time I derive benefit from the case, I am a Baal Davar, and I am not a witness at all. So what does he say? So again, let's just take the beginning of number two again. We may not get to number three tonight. V'loshon acher pirish, tegabe mamon, lo mikri tkilaso bepaslos, that in the case of this monetary bias, it's not as if the beginning was in a state of disqualification. Since he receives benefit from the case, he's not a witness at all. The way the Rimigash puts it, and this is a bit nuanced, you could have phrased this otherwise, he says, once I shed my benefit from the case, now I enter the category of witness, and now I am kasher. So tchilaso b'sofo b'kashrus. My beginning, my entry into the category of witness is b'kashrus, because again, now I no longer have that bias. And the point of my testimony is b'kashrus. Tchilaso b'sofo b'kashrus. You've circumvented the problem of tchilaso b'psol. Why dehahi shaita lav edhu klal? Because at the point that he saw, again, it's not that he was an aid puzzle, it's not that he was a disqualified witness, it's that he was not a witness at all. The ein adam me'id la'atzmo, and he invokes the principle that a person cannot testify for themselves. The damya, and he compares it to the Gemara and Makos that I've been referencing all along. The damya la'ahida amrinim b'sechas Makos, ala me'ata roveya yatzil horeg yatzil, v'mekam medavar akosav medaber. The context of the Gemara Makos, we are going to analyze this Gemara in greater detail, is what's called echad meham karav apazol, eidah shabat l'mitzas apat l'kulu. We know that in halacha you require two kosher witnesses, two good witnesses. But if you decide to bring more, you decide to bring five witnesses, if any one of them is disqualified, then even though you'd still have four kosher witnesses, the testimony is disqualified. If you all come in together, even if, Gemara says, afilu meya, if 100 people come in together, and one of them is no good, the entire testimony is disqualified. The Gemara says, if that's the case, then you should never be able to have testimony at all. Let's say there are two witnesses on somebody, let's say on an affair, on arayos, right, and on some kind of illicit sexual relationship. So the Gemara says the parties who are involved also see it at the same time, and they should always disqualify the witnesses. It says horeg yatzil. Let's say they witness a murder. The murderer was there. He saw it at the same time, and he's not allowed to testify. He's a member of the. He's a litigant itself. So. You should never be able to have testimony because you always have a group of three, the two witnesses and the person who's actually involved, and he's puzzled, so he should disqualify the others. The Gemara says, no, but b'kai me'davar akasav medaber, b'hani lav edim ninhu avol psul, b'hani lav edim ninhu. The Gemara answers, no. Obviously, when we have this principle that says that if you have lots of people and one of them is disqualified, it throws out the entire testimony, it's not talking about the people who are intimately involved in the case itself. B'kai me'davar akasav medaber. Yeah, and that line can be understood in different ways. There's an important tosis there. But the way the Rimigash is understanding it is that the people who are intimately involved in the case itself are not Edim Psulim. They are in a different category entirely. They're outside of the realm of Edos. They're outside of the realm of witnesses. Aval Psul Acher Edim Psulim Mikrim. But another disqualification, the disqualification of a Karov, somebody who's related, the disqualification of somebody who is a... Russia or a Gazlan, those are disqualifications where the person is actually considered an aid possible.
This is all really nice, but now you've created a new problem, which is that this person who freshly became kosher leidus was still not a witness, did not witness the actual event at the time.
So
meaning, like, you don't, like, retroactively become a witness that was kosher, but also, but you, and you actually saw it, but not at a time that you
okay,
were really aid,
so
but you
so
know.
Let me point out a couple of things. Number one, the Rimi Gash seems to rest on the same exact assumption as the Rivet about Tchilas of B'Sof Kashas. I do not think if you adopt the approach that we were suggesting for the Rashbam, right, that at that moment you need to be ready to go, this certainly wouldn't help you. The same exact problem would apply. I don't care why you can't deliver testimony. I don't care if it's fundamental. I don't care if it's technical. Whatever the case may be, I mean, obviously, I should qualify. There might be an excessive technicality that we wouldn't take into account, right? Let's say you had laryngitis when you saw it.
I was thinking about this.
So
like,
we wouldn't. Right. So obviously there would be a certain line, right, where we'd have to say that, you know, let's say there's a piece of tape that happens to be over your mouth, right? I mean, like we wouldn't go to the extreme in terms
if
of technicalities.
The Edition are dying and are not going to be able to
right,
be made later. That presumably does not.
Right. So there are definitely some degree of. We can agree that there would be some degree of technicality that would not qualify. But on the whole, we would be much more expansive in allowing technicalities to be administered, even if it's not a formal psal. So I do think you're correct, Jerry, in asserting that this would, if you adopt the Rashbam's approach, this would suffer from the same problem. I'll also note that the way the Rimi Gash formulates it is kind of funny, right? Like you were saying, oh, now he becomes a witness, and now he's kosher, so it's chilas of b'sof
b'kashrus. He's trying to have his cake and eat it too.
Right.
Like his...
You could have used a formulation that's more similar to the right. In other words, tchilaso is not the moment when he should... What the Rimi Gash is saying is that what is tchila? What is the moment of the beginning? It's the moment when he enters the category of witness. So namely, the moment when he sheds his bias, that is the moment when he becomes a witness. That is tchilaso b'kashrus. You could have said tchila is the point of seeing it, like the traditional understanding of tchila. But just like the Ravid said, if you're only disqualified due to a technicality, there's no problem. The Rimi Gash could have said that as well. He could have said, the only problem at the point of tchila is if you are an aid puzzle, is if you are a disqualified witness. If you are somebody who's outside of the category of testimony, then the tchila so b'psol is not actually a problem. Right? That would have been an alternative formulation that the Rimi Gash could have used within the same answer. And I think very often when people quote the Rimi Gash, they actually quote it that way. But he's kind of using a slightly different formulation. Now, so he makes the assumption that Tchilas B'Sof B'Sof B'Kashas is not like the Rashbam. He makes the assumption that the nature...
Well, why, though? He's just saying it's not applicable here. Because Tchilas was later.
Right.
So it's not different, necessarily.
Well... Okay, it is different insofar as the Rashbam was focusing on the point of Re'iyah, right? And he's saying that's the point that's critical. So at the very least, he's disagreeing with the Rashbam in terms of how we define, right? Because the Rashbam was basing it on the Gzeiras HaKasuv of Ora'ah, right? So, you know, seeing is clearly a critical point for the Rashbam. At the very least, he's redefining the moment when we consider it Tchila. But yeah, that's a worthwhile point. It doesn't mean that he's necessarily disputing the nature of tchilas b'psol. At the very least, he's redefining where tchila is. If you would adopt the alternative formulation that I was talking about, right, that tchila really is that original point, it's just that he's not actually disqualified, then he would be making the exact same assumption as the Rivet. But he's also making another critical assumption, and this is something that I think people miss all the time. We'll have to hold off on the Ramban's third approach for next week. Hopefully we'll offer that next week. But he makes a third assumption that I think people really miss. And his third assumption is that anybody who is Nogaya is also a Baal Davar. A Baal Davar means one of the litigants in the case. Nogaya Be'edus means I benefit in some way from one particular party winning. Let me give an extreme example that I don't know. I don't know if this would be considered nogeya be'edus for a variety of reasons, but let me just give an example to highlight the point. Let's say Reuven and Shimon have a court case, right? And I put my stakes down in Vegas. I make a $100 bet that Reuven is going to win the case. Now, am I one of the litigants in the case? Am I one of the ba'alei davar? I'm not. Am I nogeya? Would I gain from a particular result in the case? I most certainly would. The Rimi Gash is making the very significant assumption that anybody who is nogeya, that anybody who derives benefit from the case, is also considered a ba'al davar. And there are two Rishonim who explicitly disagree with this assumption. Let me just note one of them. We're not going to see them inside. But hopefully, we'll try to see them inside next week. Let me just at least introduce one, because it's a very famous Mara Makom. Source 7 is the Rush in Makos on that Gemara that we've been talking about. And many people quote this idea of the Rimigash as being identical to this Rush in Makos. The Rush quotes the Ravid about the principle of Nimtza Echad Mehem Karav Apostle, right? Like exactly what we were speaking about before. You have 100 witnesses who walk in together, one of them is disqualified. The Gemara in Makos tells us that they should all be disqualified. But there are other cases where we do seem to be able to split. And this is the problem that's posed. It's a major sugi that comes up in the first paragraph of Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Aleph, of Ein Adam Mesa Matzma Rasha, the sugi of Palginan Dibura. There are certain cases where we do seem to be able to split and accept certain parts of testimony and not others. And what are the exactly parameters? When do you say one thing, when do you say another thing? Is a big discussion in the Rishonim. But one of the very famous sources on this is the Rush in Makos quoting the Ravid. What the Ravid says is as follows. If you have a circumstance where someone is an aid puzzle, then you throw out the entire testimony. If someone is an aide who is disqualified, you throw out the entire testimony. If someone is not a witness at all, if he is a ba'al davar, then you don't throw out the testimony. An aide puzzle, you throw out the testimony. A ba'al davar, you do not throw out the testimony. And the Ravid's language is very, very similar to the language of the Rimigash. Because a ba'al davar is not an aide puzzle, it's just that he's not an aide at all. Now, why do I note the significance of this? Who is the Rush quoting? Who's the Rush quoting?
Right.
It's quoting the Ravid. And notably, when the Rashba quoted the Ravid, he conspicuously did not give the answer of the Rimigash. He did not say that somebody who is Nogeya Be'edos is not an aid at all, the way he says in Maseches Makos, or at least the way the Rush quotes him as saying Maseches Makos. He gave an entirely different approach. What did he say? He said, like Akir was saying before, that it's a chshash. It's a chshada, that we can't rely on him. He doesn't give this alternative answer of saying that he's not an aid at all. Now, why doesn't he give that answer of the Rimigash? There could be a number of reasons why he doesn't give the answer of the Rimigash. Again, it could get into the point that we were saying before. The Rimigash has this cute formulation that he only becomes an aid at that later point, and that's Tchila. Maybe the Ravid holds, no, Tchila is the very beginning. But even still, it would be a worthwhile point, even for the Ravid, if you assume Tchila is the beginning, to say that he's not within the Parsha of Eidos at all. So I think the most obvious reason for why the Ravid does not give that answer now is because the Rimigash makes a huge leap in asserting that everyone who is Nogeya Be'edos is also a Baal Dover. And that is not at all an obvious assumption. And again, many people conflate the Ravid and the Rimigash, and I think it's really wrong. We don't have time now. Next week we will see the Ritva in Source 8 is a Rishon that explicitly distinguishes between Baal Davar and Nogeya Be'edos. He happens to think that the case in Bava Basra is a case of Baal Davar. Not, we've been treating Bava Basra as Nogeya Be'edos. He thinks that that case is a case of Baal Davar and not a case of Nogeya Be'edos, but he explicitly draws the distinction, as we will see. But those, at least we have two approaches down to what Nogeya Be'edos is all about. One approach is that it's not a formal psul at all, it's not a formal disqualification, it's just a chshash, we can't rely on you. And the approach of the Rimigash is that you're not an aid puzzel, you're just not a witness at all. You're totally outside of the category of witnesses. You are indeed a litigant, you're considered as if you are a litigant in the case, and we saw that answers the issue of tchilas psul sof bakashas. Next time we need to see the Ramban, we'll get back to Tosfos and Nida, we'll fill out the conceptual picture, and then we'll begin to explore the many, many important ramifications of this conceptual question. Shkreach.